Hi everyone, welcome to the Physionic Podcast. If you're new here, my name is Nicholas Verhoeven. I'm a PhD student in molecular medicine, and I have my master's in exercise physiology, and I've been doing research in cellular molecular biology for some time now, a number of years. And today I'm going to be discussing in this podcast episode a study by the name of a controlled trial of reduced meal frequency without caloric restriction in healthy, normal weight, middle-aged adults. And this study looks at intermittent fasting and its potential impact on cardiovascular health, as well as a few other health markers. I will preface this by saying that not everything in this study is a glowing endorsement of intermittent fasting. So if you clicked on this, or if you are listening to this because you were hoping for a across the board glowing endorsement of the type of dieting or the type of lifestyle which is fasting related, then please keep that in mind, that this is a data-driven critique. And while I do have problems with the study design itself, there it does raise some questions that I have brought up actually before in the past, looking at another study looking at intermittent fasting. So please be aware this is a science-based channel, so please critique the data as it is presented and the study methodology as it is presented. With that said, before I jump into things, if you're not following me on Instagram, I've decided to change up my technique for how I go about presenting information on Instagram. So I will be covering this paper actually in far more depth on Instagram. So feel free to follow me there. Of course, it's always free, and you can always reach out to me as well and discuss this paper as well as any other questions you might have. Okay, so with that said, let's jump into what this study found by first looking at the design of the study. So how did they go about this study? Well, as the title implies, it's a controlled trial. So they manipulated variables and they controlled other variables to make sure that they didn't have too many problems that might lead to confounding variables, variables outside of what we're actually trying to measure that may throw off the measurement itself and therefore the conclusion that we can get off of that measurement. And then they reduced meal frequency without caloric restriction. That was a big point there, in healthy, normal weight, middle-aged adults. So this would apply to healthy individuals. So the participants, which I believe there were 15, there were 10 women and 5 men. So usually there's more men than women in scientific studies, at least over the last, well, really over the last many, many decades. But in this study, they had a higher proportion of women. So maybe something to consider there. And they had all of the participants undergo each of the two conditions, meaning that these participants underwent the normal consumption of food. So they consumed 3 meals a day, which they had their calories allotted for them. So the researchers figured out based off of a caloric calculator and then measured their body weight and then tracked them for a few days or a few weeks to figure out if they hit the right calorie allotment, meaning that enough calories to reach a maintenance level to maintain their weight. So they had to consume all of their calories in 3 meals. So kind of the standard 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they did that for 8 weeks. And then they had and during those 8 weeks, so at the beginning of the study, at the 4-week mark, and then at the end of that particular condition's ending point, so the 8-week mark, then the researchers took a series of different blood measurements as well as blood pressure and things of that nature. Then they had an 11-week washout period where they were told to return back to their normal lifestyle. They didn't have to count calories. They didn't have to do anything like that. They just stuck to their old lifestyle for 11 weeks. And then they went back to the laboratory and the researchers then told them to go back on their calorie counting, but to consume all of their meals in a 4-hour window. So while other studies that I've looked at were OMAD, meaning one meal a day, I wouldn't necessarily consider this strictly OMAD because you're not consuming one meal. You have a 4-hour window. So this would be more like that traditional, semi-traditional intermittent fasting that a lot of people do. So in this situation, they consumed, let's say if one person had to consume 2,500 calories for the day to maintain their weight, they would consume all 2,500 calories in that 4-hour window. So if that's two meals or if that's one meal, but it's a 4-hour window, which is pretty small to consume all your calories. And then they did that for 8 weeks, and again measured at the beginning, measured at the halfway point, 4 weeks, and then measured at the 8-week mark. And then the researchers compared the values between the initial 8 weeks, eating three meals a day, to the last 8 weeks, which was the comparison with the quote-unquote OMAD, one meal a day, or more like a 4-hour window. Okay, so what did they find? And these participants were individuals that were between the ages 40 and 50. It's probably not going to make a huge difference, but it might make a little bit of a difference if you think of something that might throw off some of these variables. So the first thing that they investigated, and I'm not going to go over everything, but of course the study will be linked for you so you can check it out for yourself. And again, as always, like I said, on Instagram, I'll be covering the actual figures and everything in a lot more detail. So you can chime in there as well and check that out. So what did they find? Well, the first figure is looking at hunger. So the hunger cues were higher in the one meal a day condition. Now, I'm going to go through the data itself, and then I'm going to go back and explain each section as to what might be going on there. So maybe some of the physiology and some of the study methods that may be confounding their results. So the hunger was higher in the one meal a day or the 4-hour eating window condition compared to the three meals a day. The other thing that they looked at was systolic and diastolic blood pressure. So systolic being when your heart is, well, when your ventricle, that really powerful muscle that's pumping the actual blood, that compresses or contracts. That's the word I'm looking for. It contracts and pushes blood out into the aorta. And that is a high pressure environment, and that's called systolic blood pressure. So it's when you have that contraction of the left ventricle, technically also the right ventricle, but we usually focus on the left ventricle. And then diastolic is the relaxation of the heart muscle, so at the lowest point of blood pressure. And what they found is that, interestingly, they found that the shortened eating window condition, the one meal a day condition, that's what I'm going to call it from now on. I'm just going to call it one meal a day, or the fasting condition. I'll call it the fasting condition. The fasting condition had increased systolic and diastolic blood pressure. So it led to an increase in blood pressure. Now don't freak out. Don't freak out. If you are huge into fasting, I will supply an explanation for that, a potential explanation actually that the researchers came up with, which I think is probably pretty accurate. And so then another thing that they looked at was fat mass and body weight, and which is important. I'm glad that they did this because they technically said that they were going to be maintaining body weight, so consuming enough calories to maintain body weight. And what they found is that, again, in the fasting condition, they saw decreases in fat mass and decreases in body weight with no changes in fat-free mass, although that would the significance value on that was extremely close. So, but if we just focus on fat mass and body weight, you see decrease in both of those that are statistically significant. Now, that tells me immediately that they were not consuming all their calories. So that is a massive confounding variable for this overall study. But then in table 4, if you've got the study in front of you, but you don't have to, in some more data, they ended up looking at nitrogen levels. Now, nitrogen levels will tell you essentially what is the protein status of your body, so more in the bloodstream. So when you consume a bolus of protein, meaning an amount of protein. Let's say you consume some chicken, let's say 20 grams of chicken. Once that enters your intestinal tract and it gets broken down, et cetera, it crosses the intestinal barrier and goes into the bloodstream. That nitrogen level then increases because one of the chief components or the chief component of protein is that it's made up of amino acids. Amino acids have a chemical structure that revolves around nitrogen. So if you have high amino acid availability in the bloodstream, that means your nitrogen balance is going to be quite high. And if you have low nitrogen balance, well, that means that you are deficient in protein in that snapshot of a moment. That doesn't mean that overall you're deficient in protein. And it's not entirely too shocking that the fasting condition had lower fasting levels of nitrogen. And I'll speak on why that's important in just a minute. Now, another really interesting aspect, which might freak people out again, is that the fasting condition had increased total cholesterol by about a 13% increase from what I remember. It was a 13% increase in cholesterol, overall cholesterol, where they saw increases in LDL cholesterol, which is the quote unquote bad cholesterol, the low density lipoprotein cholesterol, as well as increases of the HDL cholesterol, so high density lipoprotein, which is considered the quote unquote good cholesterol. So both of those massively contributed to the overall increase in total cholesterol by about a 13% amount. So pretty sizable change in cholesterol. And then with the fasting condition, they also found a decrease in cortisol. So cortisol has been attributed to stress hormone, catabolic hormone, et cetera, and they saw a decrease in that. I think a pretty sizable decrease. It was like 30 or 40% decrease in cortisol in that snapshot of a moment. And then the final thing I wanted to briefly mention before I circle back and actually explain all of these results is they saw a non-significant, so this is statistically non-significant, so they saw a non-significant decrease in blood glucose or blood sugar levels. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this is because I've gotten a sizable amount of pushback from people on one of my pieces of content that has discussed a paper which actually does exactly what this study tried to do. They investigated in people, they wanted to look if OMAD, and this was specific to one meal a day, or really restricted feeding, restricted eating, if OMAD would lead to improvements in blood glucose levels. If people maintained their weight, meaning that you're not undergoing weight loss, because what we know is that with weight loss, you will see betterment in blood glucose levels. So you'll see betterment in diabetes and improvements in just healthy individuals as well. So what that study found, however, is that if you maintained weight, that actually was detrimental to blood glucose. So you saw increased blood glucose levels if you consumed all of your calories in one meal or in one sitting. And they did not have any changes in body weight. So what's interesting here is that they're not finding that. So the exact same, roughly the same type of conditions, and yet they're not finding changes on blood glucose levels. So what is going on there? Is the other study wrong? Did I present the wrong information? Is everybody that disliked that content with no critique of the data, that just disagree with me, just even though I'm presenting the data to them, are they right? Well, let's find out. I have an explanation, and it's quite a good one, if I might say. Okay, so let me go back to the hunger thing. So here's a confounding variable of this study. If you look at the methods, when they did their testing for, blood measurements, blood pressure, all that stuff, what they did was they did a fast. So each participant had to fast before the measurements were taken, which makes sense. That should be the case, a minimum of 8 hours, but usually you want to aim for 12 hours, and they aimed for 12 hours, which is great. Now, they did that fasting protocol of 12 hours before the measurements for the 3 meals a day condition. So when all the participants were in that first phase where they're consuming 3 meals a day, they did the 12 hours of fasting before the blood measurements and blood pressure and et cetera, body weight, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when they switched to the 1 meal a day or the 4 hour eating window, they waited 16 hours before they measured these measurements. So that's not great, I'll be honest. That is, if I'm frank, that's a pretty stupid thing to do. That's a huge factor to have an extra 4 hours of fasting for the condition that's consuming all their food in that 4 hour window. So that's going to throw things off. So is hunger going to be increased as a result if they measured it at that same time? Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think that's too crazy of a thought to think that hunger might be elevated. But even beyond that, if you are having them measure, you know, on a day-to-day basis, of course, if a person is not fasting, and if they are fasting, of course, the person that is fasting has been removed from food for, I don't know, let's say 14 hours. Yeah, they're going to be hungrier than the person who's been removed from food for 8 hours and just ate a meal, or ate a meal 2 hours ago. So that's not that shocking that hunger would be elevated for the fasting condition. I'm not going to really argue that one. I just think that their methods, and this is going to be a problem going forward in what I'm going to explain going forward, but their methods are a little bit off in that regard because of the measurement time, 12 hours compared to 16 hours. So the next one that I mentioned is blood pressure, right? So I mentioned that systolic and diastolic blood pressure were elevated, and that's really scary, right? Like, oh, is this guy full of it? Is he telling us that fasting is necessarily evil, and it's causing cardiovascular disease, and it's causing blood pressure issues? The answer is we don't know, okay? Not based off of this study. The reason why is because, again, this measurement, they took one at 12 hours and they measured one at 16 hours. They measured one in the morning and they measured one in the early afternoon. What's problematic about that? Well, you may not think about it, but your circadian rhythm is actually going to be variable throughout the day. Now, that's why it's called a rhythm. It's called a circadian rhythm. It's based off of your day and night cycle, and it determines that. But it also has an impact on all kinds of different areas of your body, including your blood pressure. So what the researchers mentioned is that it's possible, and I would say it's probably pretty likely, that the blood pressure change was not due to the fasting itself, but because of the time of day that they measured blood pressure. So if you measure blood pressure in the morning, you get lower blood pressure. And if you measure blood pressure in the afternoon, you tend to have higher blood pressure. So that is probably the confounding variable, if not a confounding variable, for why they saw increases in blood pressure. So would I take that to the bank and say fasting leads to increases in blood pressure and therefore it's detrimental to cardiovascular health? No, I wouldn't, not based off of this study. Although it certainly could still be the case based on other studies. I don't know. I haven't investigated those yet. So let's table that for the time being. Now, the other one was fat mass and body weight both decreased, which seems like a good thing, but obviously because the study tried to maintain body weight, obviously they were pretty unsuccessful at that, because that means that the individuals that were consuming their calories, all these participants went under all the conditions. So these participants, once they went into the 4 hour consuming window condition, they struggled, and they actually ended up reporting this, that they ended up consuming a little bit less than they normally would. And that's probably because you're getting a lot of stomach discomfort, especially in the first initial week or two. You're going to have some stomach discomfort from trying to pack in all of your calories while not reducing the amount of food that you consume. So these individuals ended up consuming a little bit less, and that's, let's be real, that's the reason why they had a loss in body fat and body weight. Now, what does that mean in terms of fasting? Well, I mean, you could look at it in a positive way, right? And this is something that a lot of people have touted. I've said this before in the past as well, that one of the benefits of fasting or having a restricted eating window is because of a limited amount of time that you can consume food. Therefore, if you are given free rein to consume all the food that you want within a particular window, even if that's controlled up to your maintenance, you may not want to because it's just so much food to consume in that window. So if you can get to that window, you go wild and you consume like 1,000 calories, 1,500 calories, and eventually you start getting pretty full and you don't want to consume any more. So that's probably what ended up happening to these participants. And of course, that is ultimately what was reported. They ended up under consuming a little bit, not by a whole lot, by a little bit. And imagine that repeating day after day over the 8 weeks. Of course, that's going to have an impact. It wasn't like a massive drop in body weight, but slight, and that makes sense. Okay, now the next one is blood nitrogen levels. Now this is to, again, speak to, this is more telling for me of that 12-hour measurement and the 16-hour fasting measurement. This tells me that there's a problem with that because, and not necessarily, but it gives me a clue at least that that might be an issue because the people that ended up fasting longer are of course going to have a lower nitrogen balance in their bloodstream, which makes sense because it's been a lot longer since they've consumed nitrogen, or more specifically amino acids within proteins. So that's why that was important. That's why I wanted to point that out. And next, moving on to cholesterol. Now, this was the big one. This was the big one. This is tough to figure out because you would think that if they waited longer to measure these different levels, potentially you might see increases in blood lipids, meaning triglycerides. And they do see a slight trend towards an increase in triglycerides with the fasting condition, but it was non-significant, although it was starting to go near that, so starting to get to that point. So maybe if they'd had a greater sample size, more participants in the study, maybe they would have seen a significant rise. So, you know, what is this telling of? It's difficult to say. Is this going to lead to poor health outcomes? Maybe not, because you are getting the protective effects of the HDL cholesterol, which brings cholesterol back to the liver to be disposed of, but you're also seeing increases in LDL cholesterol. So maybe the entire cholesterol system is being upregulated as a result of fasting. Now, does that ultimately then lead to poor outcomes in cardiovascular health? We cannot say based off of this study. And I would not even relate that to the blood pressure situation. However, it is something that is difficult to explain. We can't even explain that with decreases in consumption. We can't explain that through any other of the potential confounding variables of this study. So I think that this is probably the one where you're probably getting the most influence or most evidence that it is fasting itself is having an effect on cholesterol. So increasing overall cholesterol. However, if that then translates to applicable changes in health, we don't know. So that's something we'll have to investigate in the future, and I certainly will on Physionic. So stay tuned for that. Okay, and finally, I did want to mention the blood glucose levels. Well, cortisol levels were lower. I think that is also a real effect. That could be because of the circadian rhythms. That could be because of the extended time before they measured. But it's also possible that that came from the fasting. So there are a number of different variables out. It's really difficult to tease that out. So we don't know. But what we do know is that the data showed that there was decreased cortisol. And finally, the blood glucose level. So this was actually the most intriguing for me because this again proved my point, or it offered me more evidence, I should say, that what my previous piece of content said, which was elevated blood glucose levels, was correct. Now, why would I say that? Because this goes in the exact opposite direction, that there was no increase in blood glucose levels from fasting and from this fasting condition. Well, one, because they took longer to measure it, so that's a confounding variable. That is definitely going to have an effect. If you wait another 4 hours, of course that's going to have an effect on the blood sugar levels. They're going to be lower than if you had measured them 12 hours before, or if you had measured them 4 hours before, sorry. So at the same time, at the 12-hour mark. Now, not only that, because although the study says that the researchers mentioned that they were trying to maintain their weight for these participants, the participants did not see a decrease or did not maintain their body weight. They saw a decrease in body weight. So this, again, shows most likely that fasting with a change in body weight, meaning a lack of caloric consumption, a decrease in caloric consumption, leads to improvements or at least the regulation of blood glucose levels. So that's a positive there, assuming that confounding variable isn't the real factor. But I think based off of other studies, I think we can pretty conclusively say that fasting in general decreases blood glucose levels with the addition of weight loss. However, if you do not have weight loss, then it seems that, at least based off of the evidence that we have so far, and we would need more evidence of this, that blood glucose levels rise if you consume all of your calories to maintain your body weight in one sitting or in a short period of time. So this encourages me on my interpretation of the several studies that I've looking at those outcomes, looking at fasting, looking at weight loss, is it there, is it not, and blood glucose levels, is it increased, is it decreased, is it the same as the normal feeding condition. Okay, so that's that. Hopefully I explain things well enough. I realize that I'm not able to give you answers to everything because there were confounding variables, you know, variables that change in the study or variables that can affect the results of the study. Therefore, they muddy up the potential conclusions that we can make out of this particular study, but it still tells us some information, and I think it's pretty interesting. So again, I'll be covering more on this on Instagram and other social media, so be sure to follow me there if you'd like to one, see the data yourself. Of course, I have the paper linked, and two, if you'd like to engage with me on discussing this topic, I would be happy, really happy, to hear your opinions and any critiques of the study that you have. Okay, with that said, thanks for stopping by, and I hope to have the absolute pleasure of speaking with you in the next one. Have a good one, guys. See ya.